Welcome to the Occupational Safety Leadership Podcast, episode number 137. In today's episode, we continue our journey on hazard identification, and we talk about chemical alternatives today. When I speak to a lot of safety professionals, and when I say a lot, it's definitely over half. They really struggle in this area. One, because it takes a lot of time and effort. And a lot of us are really just trying to hang on. So it's really hard to sit down and think about something when you're just worried about the day-to-day stuff then. So that makes it hard. And the second thing is when you're coming upon a issue, you already have established chemical. It's already part of a process, it's part of a product, it's part of something then. It's really hard to get traction because somebody says it works. You know, I can see the numbers. I can see this. You know, we can measure things and it works. So it's really hard to say, well, why don't we look at something that's equally as good or maybe even better, less hazardous. Maybe it costs a little more and maybe it doesn't. Maybe it generates less hazardous waste. So we have to factor in other cost and not just like the sheer 100% cost of the chemical only. So, but let's just dive right in and get started then. So basically we use the chemical because it has a certain property that we're looking for. And whether that property is you're looking for something that's corrosive and it's going to etch something off, it's a lubricant, it's a whatever the chemical is, possesses that certain property over there. And I think I've talked enough about how it's easier, of course, obviously, to look at implementing chemical alternatives when you're doing something brand new. You're in the design process, you're buying some new equipment, you know, something, it's not set. So when something's not set, it's always easier to go back and really understand why something is going to happen. It's also a fantastic chance to get yourself into the process and understand if the people actually know that there are alternatives out there, or it's driven by sheer cost and nobody had ever even factored in the safety of this chemical out there. Again, once you have that established product line, it's really hard to get this thing up and running then and really say, I know it's running and I want to run some tests and I want to prove that something is, you know, better, cheaper, safer, whatever the sales point, I should say, because ultimately a lot of us in safety are in sales. We have to look at how that we're going to influence, say, purchase, influence a process, influence how people are trained, you know, so it can be difficult. One thing that really helps me out is just to literally sit down, talk to the folks about the hierarchy of hazard controls, you know. So if we're looking at this chemical, you know, we obviously cannot eliminate it because we need something that's going to do the property we're looking for. So the next thing we want to look at replacing the hazard. How can we come up with something that's safer out there? You know, and then of course I try to focus on that and not so much of the engineering controls, admin and PPE, because many people just think that the answer is, but I gave them gloves, you know. So, and while that's obviously better than nothing, you know, that's not really a good way to operate. I'd like to challenge anybody out there to that if the answer is just have them wear a respirator, well, sit at your own office and wear a respirator for half an hour and just do your everyday admin tasks, you know, and tell me if you're a little bit more or less productive in that, if you can hear better, you can your breathing is not labored, you know. So PPE is an answer, but it should always be the last answer out there. So when we think about our factors, of course, you know, we have to think about the factors of we're going to purchase this chemical. And that's really easy just to literally sit down and say, ah, so here's the purchase of it, dot, 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 and all that. So the storage of it then, so this does not factor in too much on the cost, but sometimes it does. Is it something that because it's so new, you literally can't find that much of it, so you may have to buy more up front. Maybe it's a chemical that is going to be used. Let's say it's some kind of lubricant for a pump out there, and of course by pump we mean like a lot of pumps, not just a single pump out there. So let's say that it's a little bit cheaper, it's doing the same thing and all that, but you have to swap it out every 5,000 hours, whereas opposed to the other one it could go for 20,000 hours, So you're obviously going to have to buy a lot more of this. And of course, you have to factor in because people will say, well, now the maintenance people are spending more time, more effort changing oil, So where's that trade-off at out there? And then when it comes to disposal or end of life, can you send it back to have it recycled? Is it going to count as hazardous waste? Is it something that's consumed in the process, of course, and this whole thing? So you have to understand all of those costs, because there's also a cost to when you generate hazardous waste. You own that waste from cradle to grave. So there's that legacy cost, along with a lot of the other admin things of I have to get a permit, I have to inspect it every 7 days, all the other kind of stuff. And when I say I really mean the company has to, because you as a safety professional can't do everything. So there has to be a way that others in the staff are taking on that responsibilities. In an ideal sense, whoever is in charge of that product line, whoever is in charge, because if they're in charge of either the maintenance folks or the production folks or something, then they know exactly how to get the stuff done, and not just get it done, but make them in charge of taking care of the waste and monitoring and measuring and all that good stuff. Finally, you present your findings to the management then, and it has to be their decision, because a lot of management folks have a different risk appetite, So us safety folks, we think about safety as in someone's hurt, somebody's not hurt. I can measure a cost of workers' comp. I can do these things. You want me to buy gloves? I can measure gloves. I can measure respirators. I can measure cost for spirometer test. I can measure that then. But there's a lot of times where management is worried about the legality of things too. So whereas we are too, they're very focused on money, and so sometimes they actually are okay with a little bit of risk, because let's face it, you can't go through life without any risk at all. One of the biggest casualty producing events that we do most days is take a shower, So in the grand scheme of things, that's a pretty risky activity, and I've never heard of anybody opting not to take a shower because they might slip in the shower and get hurt. So ultimately, it always has to be the responsibility of management, because you only control so much. You can't make everybody do everything, and actually, you don't want to make anybody do anything, because that means they're only doing it because you happen to be there, and the second you leave, they'll just turn around and go do their own thing. So what we want to do is to influence decisions and let them make that decision, because then they have the buy-in of this thing. Okay, I'm off my soapbox on that one then. And that wraps up today's episode. So episode 137, hazard identification. We talked a little bit about strategies for chemical alternatives. I've done a couple of these and it's worked out great. And I've also done a couple where not that it didn't work out great, but I literally couldn't show enough of a difference between the hazard and the cost and hazardous waste and who's doing what, when, and where. And so everybody saw it as a exercise that was awesome to really figure out where this money goes. But it was not something that management wanted to go forward and pursue on this thing then. So, but do not be afraid to do these things out there, because ultimately, when people get into the safety field, it's never going to be to get rich and retire at age 40. You know, that would be awesome, of course. But most of us got into the safety field because we want to help people. We want to make things better out there. Okay, episode 137 is complete. Thank you for joining me. My name is Dr. David Ayers. Thank you and have a safe day.